This is the Lombardi Line
with Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard on VSiN.
We welcome you back in. It is hour number two of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. I'm Ben Wilson from our downtown Las Vegas Circus Sportsbook studio. Big thanks to Mike Palm for filling in today. Great to be with you, Mike. It's been a fun first hour.
Thanks, Ben.
We don't get the usual, you know, depth of topics. Because usually we're just a football show, but it's been fun talking
to
hockey.
And 76ers. You can talk 76ers.
Well, we can right talk now. 76ers when Michael Lombardi is on. Michael will be back tomorrow. Don't worry. Mike here, the VP of Operations at the Circa, the D, and the Golden Gate in Las Vegas. Let's transition back, though, into the AFC Championship game. We did our full NFC Championship breakdown in hour number one. And to help us with some of the latest storylines coming out of Cincinnati, it's Charlie Goldsmith. You can give a follow to at @CharlieG_, beat reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer, covering both the Bengals and the Reds. Going into our last break, Charlie, Mike Palm, my esteemed co-host today, said, how is Lou Anarumo not getting more buzz for head coaching positions around the league? What do you make of the development there with an elite Cincinnati defense that has gone underreported in a lot of circles?
First of all, there's not a defensive coordinator or a defensive coach in all of NFL who's done a better job tailoring hyper-specific game plans and executing them against the elite quarterbacks in the league, or a defensive coordinator identifying free agents and draft picks who are perfect fits for his defenses. I think Lou would be a very good head coach. The thing is, you know, he doesn't come from a, you know, one of the hot coaching trees. He doesn't come from the style of the Saints or all of these hot defensive names you're seeing. He's also, you know, on the older side. He's been coaching for 20, 30 years now. So he's not necessarily the archetype that you're seeing the hot head coaching candidates being. But he would, you know, be a great hire for any team, I think, looking for a defensive-minded head coach.
Charlie, how much has the been there, done that confidence of the Bengals playoff run last year factored into them having to take this same tough trail, go to the number two seed in Buffalo and now to the number one seed in Kansas City? How confident is this team heading to Arrowhead?
The Bengals were just as confident last year, and that's by design as well. Look at how the Bengals assembled this team. On the offense, they got a ton of guys who had played in huge college games in the college football playoff and played really well as they played on championship teams. That's Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, left tackle Jonah Williams, running back Joe Mixon. And then on the defense, they signed a lot of veteran free agents who had played for playoff teams, the Texans, the Saints, the Cowboys. The Bengals already had a lot of winners in the building by the time they even arrived on the scene last season. So the confidence level, I think, is the same as it was last year because there are, you know, 22 guys in the starting lineup who have been winners for their whole life.
You think about Jonah Williams, one of those names you mentioned, Charlie. It's part of an offensive line that had a huge level of concern coming into the Buffalo game, yet that didn't seem to be an issue whatsoever. And now the general narrative is, okay, it seems like Cincinnati's figured that out. No, nothing to see here. But there's still three starting offensive linemen out as of now. Two of those players trying to come back potentially this week were both questionable. And you add Ted Karras now, the starting center and you know offensive leader of that line, who is questionable as well, banged up in the game last week. What's your level of concern now flipping this forward a week into the Kansas City game?
Yeah, the Bengals offensive line, to be frank, shocked me. A bunch of guys who had never had a game like that, punching the Bills in the mouth like that. Certainly encouraging, certainly better for the Bengals to have that under their belt, but the biggest difference is the Bills didn't have Chris Jones. The Bengals are going to be facing a defensive player of the year candidate this week. The guy who I think right now is the best interior pass rusher in all football, someone who the Chiefs can move to any spot on the offensive line. They've put him at end tackle, three tech, nose tackle, whatever to exploit your biggest weakness. And so the biggest concern I think the Bengals have game planning for that side of the ball is how do they react to the way the Chiefs use Chris Jones and how can they try to neutralize him as best they can?
Charlie, if Cincinnati is unable to beat the Chiefs for the second straight year in the AFC Championship game, what will be the biggest reason?
That's a great question. Probably, I would guess, the offensive line would be a factor in that. The other factor would be cornerback. The Bengals have one of the best cornerbacks in football, Chidobe Awuzie, but he tore his ACL in October, has been out since then. And Eli Apple and Cam Taylor-Britt are rookies. There have been highs and lows over the course of the season. Notably for them, their highs have come against Patrick Mahomes in the regular season and Josh Allen in the playoffs, the best two games each of them have played this season. But you can see, you know, Mahomes, an elite quarterback, will probably have to be more pocket-oriented. You could see him just like he's done to basically every cornerback in the NFL, try to make, you know, his classic incredible throws to exploit that matchup. So that's the other big X factor on Sunday.
And we're talking with Charlie Goldsmith right now on the Lombardi Line. Charlie, a reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer, covering all things Cincinnati Bengals. You look at the defensive side of the ball, Charlie, from last week for Cincy. Five different players with at least two pressures on Josh Allen, the Buffalo quarterback, a 44% team pressure rate in the first half. If you're looking at how to expect the game plan to go from Lou Anarumo, the defensive coordinator, just how much pressure are you envisioning Cincinnati trying to get on Mahomes up the middle, given his lack of mobility there?
I think it'll be a mix. So, like, the Bengals have played the Chiefs three times in the last 12 months, so it's basically a divisional game by now. And there have been ebbs and flows to the game plan. The first couple matters, really, at the AFC Championship game, the whole thing was they dropped eight. They only rushed three. They beat Mahomes back that way. Then they face him again 10 months later. Mahomes is expecting all this drop eight stuff, and the Bengals attacking with blitz after blitz after blitz on third down and saved the drop eight stuff for really the biggest play of the game in the fourth quarter, only doing it really once when it mattered then. There will be a mix. There's like a rotation. The whole point of the Bengals' defense, to use a baseball analogy, is they try to make you know not know which pitch you're throwing. They try to really keep you off guard in the batter's box with an offensive mentality. And so I guess who's to say what the Bengals will throw at Mahomes this time, because they are counting on the fact that Mahomes won't know what's coming.
Charlie, how much was the snowy turf in Orchard Park a factor in slowing down the pass rush on both sides? I know we've heard a lot of speculation or conjecture that the offensive line performed well because tough to rush on a slick turf.
What won the Bengals the game on the defensive side of the ball on Sunday was their defensive line played the best game I've ever seen from them. And it is a really, really good defensive line. Sam Hubbard, a guy making $10 million a year, Trey Hendrickson, a Pro Bowler, DJ Reader, the best nose tackle in football, and BJ Hill, a defensive tackle on a big extension as well. They've invested a lot in their front, and then that front took over the game. First drive, quarterback hit, throws, forces Allen to sail the ball. Second drive, Hendrickson creates a pressure, hits Allen as he throws, makes him throw the ball away. The last drive was a pressure that created an incompletion as well. Time after time after time, the defensive line took over. So, you know, from that perspective, you know, the defensive line will be in an even better position this week. The thing is, though, they will be facing, I think, the best offensive line in football. So it's going to be huge how the Bengals' defensive line, whether or not they can keep that level going, again, against the best unit in the NFL.
Now, Mike, you bring that up. It is so funny how we looked at the O-line saying, oh, well, Cincy, they got away with it because of the slick turf. And then the Bengal D-line just, I mean, tortured the Buffalo offensive line. So it's interesting how some people would want to phrase that going both ways. You know, the thing, Charlie, that ended up playing out, too, on the Bengal side that had literally happened once the entire year was success for Joe Mixon in the running game. Only his second 100-plus yard rushing performance. I saw it was the most yards before contact per carry since 2019 in a game for Mixon. What sort of performance do you expect out of him this week?
It's weird. Whenever the Bengals have played the Chiefs over the last 2 years, both teams have run the ball really well. And that's really by design. The Bengals and Chiefs are both saying, do not beat us with your incredibly dangerous passing attacks. We will let you run the ball. And both teams have been pretty efficient running the ball as well on both sides in these matchups. With Mixon specifically, look at the course of the season. He hasn't stacked up the most rushing yards, but he has been one of the most efficient running backs in football. When you incorporate down and distance and his ability to get first downs and how he, you know, the output he gets in different specific situations, he's been very efficient. And that's really what the coaching staff has preached to him. That's what his role is on a team that's going to want to throw the ball as much as humanly possible.
Charlie, outside of the Green Bay game last year, Evan McPherson had a tremendous year and was a big reason that they were able to advance in the playoffs, that and not turning the ball over. He hasn't had quite as good a year in his follow-up campaign. Are there any concerns heading into Kansas City about McPherson?
No. McPherson, so week one, the Bengals' long snapper got hurt and their backup tight end was the long snapper. Take that week out. And McPherson has only missed two kicks that mattered in the game all season. That's pretty good. You know, it does mean less when you miss an extra point when you're up 17 points, I think. And you also add into the fact that they do have a new holder and a new snapper this year. I think that's probably had some of a factor in McPherson, you know, the overall output of the kicking game. But McPherson in particular, I think he's one of the three most talented kickers in football in the building. I know there's no concern with him. And in fact, there's as much confidence in him in a huge situation as there is any player on the roster.
Charlie, let's take you out with this question off of football. Which will happen first? The Cincinnati Reds make the playoffs or your Northwestern Wildcats make the NCAA tournament?
You know, Northwestern's got a shot this year. They really impressed me with the toughness defensively in particular they showed against Wisconsin on Monday night. Audis and Bowie have really taken steps forward as like mature, consistent playmakers. So Northwestern could do it this year. They also have good facilities in recruiting to do it down the road. The Reds are in the middle of a long rebuild.
That's putting it kindly. The Reds are in the middle of a long rebuild. But Charlie Goldsmith, he's enjoying life covering the Bengals right now for the Inquirer, but a true pro because he'll then flip right into baseball season after that covering the Reds. Charlie, really appreciate the time. Really good insight, too, on this game. We thank you for stopping by here on the Lombardi Line.
Thank you.
Thanks, Charlie.
I'll never forget, Mike, where I was. The Northwestern, that first NCAA tournament appearance. And they had a money line against Vanderbilt. There was a very questionable travel call in that game.
Who was the official? I don't know, but I figured you would.
I had a game last year where Bill Vinovich was the official. And I went up to him and said, hey, you do a really good job on the NFL. And he said, thank you. It was a nice back and forth.
You know what's underrated of officials is how they manage situations where there's conflict with the coaches or players. He's very good. He's always in control on the field.
He's the anti-Teddy Valentine.
Turn his back.
turn his back. All right, so thanks again to Charlie for joining us. We'll get into our full thoughts as we get the full breakdown on the AFC Championship game next because there's been a lot of line movement, but it did seem like yesterday, actually about the time we were on the air, that the line reached its peak of Bengals -3. We'll tell you where the line is at now and how we're looking to attack this game next.
With Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not only today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits are another way VSiN is here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Looking at my odds screen right now, Mike Palm, and I'm seeing more. It seems like, regardless of the time of day, there has been steady movement one way or the other on Kansas City and Cincinnati. Another tick down. We're down to Cincinnati -1, painted market wide. -3 at Caesars. While Mike Pritchard and I were on the air yesterday, of course, I went to my phone to bet it and missed it because it was up for about 3 minutes. Unfortunately, back from 2.5 as high on that number market wide for Cincinnati. Now down to 1. What do you make here of the Kansas City money coming?
Are you only going to bet both dogs if they hit 3? Is that your strategy this weekend? I know you've teased up the 49ers already.
My strategy, I teased San Francisco with Cincinnati on the openers to get when Cincinnati was a point and a half underdog. So my thought was was waiting to see if Kansas City got to 3, I would bet them. But if not, I'm still happy to tease Kansas City. And I did, as the number started to move down yesterday, I did tease Kansas City up as well. So I have about a 14-point middle with the Kansas City game. Obviously, San Francisco has to do their part in game number 1. But if assuming they can cover 8.5, that would be the situation. And I'm happy to go into this game with that because I don't see it being a runaway. Obviously, if Mahomes ends up getting hurt, is severely compromised, that would be the one concern on the Kansas City side. But I see Kansas City finding a way to make this game tight, regardless of Mahomes' status.
Each weekend of the playoffs so far, Ben, I picked one game that I bet straight. And I think I like to stick to that, right? I did the brain dead teaser with the two Saturday favorites last weekend, but I had San Francisco. And the first week, we took the 3 with the Giants. I like the NFC game. This is a tough game for me because I still think Mahomes was very compromised in the second half. Not just he's not going to scramble, but I thought he couldn't plant and he couldn't drive. And the passes he missed were high. He left the passes high because he couldn't get into them. I don't know how fully healthy he'll be. He's got a big will to win. He seems to be able to get it done. You talked about it earlier, Andy Reid in designing a game plan to address some of his limitations will probably be good. And then at the same time, you have a Chiefs team that all they do is just cover. That's all this team does. They're against the spread record from mid last year on. It's just something remarkable around 80% what they've done. The defense is underrated. Look, they held the Chiefs to 3 points at home in the second half of the AFC Championship game last year. That's with Tyreek Hill. right? That's with a healthy Mahomes. So this team's very good. They don't turn the ball over, the Bengals. Joe Burrow seems to be a winner. It's just too tough for me to say. It's hard to bet against the Chiefs because they're at home and it's Mahomes. This is a game I think that Endgame is built for, where you go out and you look at two drives and you say, Mahomes is able to exploit something about the Cincinnati defense, or this is going to be a long uphill battle for Mahomes. They're going to establish Nixon to slow down the pass rush, things like that, that you can determine through the first two-thirds of a quarter. Basically, I like to see four drives and get an opinion. I thought you knew early on in Buffalo in that game, too. It was too easy for Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. What they were doing offensively, they rarely faced third downs on those first two touchdown drives.
Cincinnati was, what, minus 125 in the money line after two drives for each team? And you're going, really? This has been completely one-sided so far. And what's interesting about the in-game thoughts, at least for Mahomes' end in the Kansas City offense, when you consider that Lou Anarumo is a defensive coordinator, the three previous meetings have limited the Chiefs to 20 total second-half points allowed, two fourth-quarter field goals. Because of those in-game adjustments, if you like Kansas City, you're banking on them getting off to a fast start and then figuring out those adjustments as the game goes. So if the Chiefs don't get off to a really positive start, and let's say it plays to a slower pace, at least early, and Cincinnati doesn't have a ton of success on the scripted drives, you'll probably see a number that's very close to where we're at right now, and that could be an opportunity to get Cincinnati in-game.
Yeah. I want to ask your opinion, because in these big games like this, if I win the toss, I think I want to take the football. I don't know. I mean, like, you let Philadelphia get up right away 7-0, Cincinnati right away 7-0. I know there's strategy involved, and you get the ball in the first half and controlling the middle eight, but I think in big games like this where emotions are high, you want the ball first and you want to get in control of the game.
Especially if you're going up against a team you know is really, really good on the scripted plays, and Kansas City, despite all the questions on Mahomes, that is a team that qualifies. So it's almost like that, you know, in a weird way, the pressure you're putting on. If you have a quarterback who's severely compromised, so if you're Cincinnati, I say, yeah, absolutely, you want the ball first, because you're potentially putting pressure on Patrick Mahomes. If you make Mahomes get the ball and he's already down, and you have no idea what you're getting on the ankle, that makes it that much tougher. So I'm with you on that.
How often do you get involved in player props, Ben?
I'm a rare player prop guy. Very
I know.
Rare.
Doing the podcast with Danny Burke, I've
he loves his props.
Yeah, and so I think in this game I might, because I'm not going to play a side or the total pre-flop, I might look at some props here. I'm always amazed at Cincinnati's ability to not turn the ball over, and that's been a big part of their success here. And so you look at an interception prop for Joe Burrow going under a half. I think it's something to look at here. I don't think you could do it with Mahomes because I don't think he's in full control of his accuracy right now with the high ankle sprain. But I would look from a passing perspective, not necessarily at completions or total yards or attempts, but at that interception prop for Burrow.
Now, that is interesting with how rock solid Burrow has been in down the stretch. I'm sure the Kelce props, if you look at receiving, will be the ones that get hammered the most. The guy only had 14 catches for 98 yards and two touchdowns. 13 catches on 13 targets that on passes that went 10 air yards or less. And now you have a Patrick Mahomes guy who's likely not going to be extending plays. At least that's the thought. With the legs. So it's funny to see how the market has continued to boost Kelce. Now, 6.5 receptions, that was the number last week, but keep in mind that is heavy, heavy juice to the over. 76.5 is the receiving yards for Kelce, bumped up about 5 yards or so from a low 70s mark last week. I would not play that, but I'm sure a lot of bettors are going to look at that number and say, really? Kelce 7 for 78 is still a very, very logical outcome for him.
You think the market will move on this prop? Do you think, I know the heavy juice, but do you think it gets to a 7 if you see nothing but over money?
I could see it. I mean, it closed 6.5 minus 145 last week over. So
Danny Burke, now I'm not blaming Danny Burke, but in the Seattle-San Francisco game, I said Pete Carroll's going to want to try to run the ball here and control this game. And so I didn't bet the yards. I bet Kenneth Walker over 15.5 carries. Well, he had 14.5, and I lost the bet. He actually had they got down two scores, and they abandoned. He actually, when they were down 14, had an 11-yard run on a first down play called back by holding, and then never touched the ball again. So it can be it can leave a real sour taste. That's a pretty bad beat.
That's rough. Yeah, you were
right. Of course, Britton has texted me at halftime, said, "Looking great on your prop bet." I should have tried to find a way to get off it.
Should have tried a way to middle. Yes, Mike Palmer, you can hear on the VSiN Pro Football Betting Podcast hosted by our guy Danny Burke. So you'll be on that again this week.
I'm assuming. I know Humans is traveling with the golf, but maybe we can get Brady Cannon, who did the Monday games every week with Danny.
Okay.
He did three versions. He did Thursday night's game with Humans and Monday's with Brady, and then I did the Sunday rundown with him. I know Brady was real. I think Brady only lost one bet on a Monday night this year, and even with his leans, he was like 15-1 or something. So maybe we can get a three-man weave going
there
tomorrow afternoon with Brady.
It was a very good year for the guys on the Pro Football Betting Podcast. As far as the props go, it's one of those things that happens every year where you get into – weeks like these where there's fewer games on the card, people are looking for more angles to bet. But if you aren't betting props consistently throughout the regular season, I always say use some caution as you go into these because the markets are much tighter. And the reason for prop betting being so popular in the regular season is markets usually a little softer and you can find some very good edges on numbers. I don't see any edges this week, at least on an AFC championship where the only one you could kind of point to is, well, if Mahomes is way, way better or way, way worse than the perception is, which right now is about, 60% health.
Yeah, we always say have three outs, have four outs, have five outs. If you're betting props all year, you need to have seven or eight outs because the lines, to your point, the soft market, I mean, there's arbitrage opportunities. But just beside that, variance in the numbers of 3-4 yards, a catch and a half, three completions. I mean, you can find this around the board. So always have as many outs as you can. Even if you're doing it recreationally, you still want to be successful at it.
It's the principle. Mm-hmm. The thing that does interest me, though, at least as far as Patrick Mahomes this week, as much as from the eye test he looked shaky after returning to the game, if you look at the advanced numbers, his EPA per play after returning in the second half from the ankle injury, it would have graded out as the second best EPA on the season. Number one being Patrick Mahomes in the regular season. So his numbers were still really, really good. Just wonder, with such a good schematic wizard as Andy Reid as a coach and Mahomes' ability to get the most out of whatever condition he is in physically, are we not overrating this a little bit? And was a move all the way to 2.5 probably too much? Because that's the way I kind of lean as of now. It's why I just tease Kansas City up.
My personal opinion is from a bookmaking perspective, the game right now where it's at is where it should be at 1. Because you can't put it at a pick from a teaser perspective. You make them the 1 with so much uncertainty, you make Kansas City 1 in the market. But boy, I can't. If this game got to 3, I would be forced to take a field goal.
It doesn't seem like we're getting there. I mean, it's come back down. I got the big middle. Let's just see if we get a 3-point game. Cash a ticket both ways on Sunday. That's the way I'm trying to target it. Harry Gagnon from the Against All Odds podcast with Cousin Sal. He has a bunch of plays ready to go. We'll have Harry on the Lombardi line next.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN with Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard.
If you're looking for a betting edge on football's big game, the VSiN experts have got you covered. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber with an introductory offer of only $9.99. VSiN Pro subscribers get access to our daily recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests. Tools like our betting splits, deep dive betting reports, VSiN betting guides for the biggest games of the season, where our experts break down brackets, best bets, and all the big game props. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today to sign up for only $9.99. That is VSIN.com/subscribe. Back with Mike Palm, VP of Operations here at Circa. We're at the Circa Sportsbook Studios, downtown Las Vegas. We welcome Harry Gagnon onto the show from the Against All Odds podcast, who used to be, Mike, a Las Vegas sportsbook supervisor here at Red Rock, right, Harry? That was your main joint. And where else were you at, Harry?
I opened that up in around 2006. Before that, before there was even Green Valley Ranch, I was at Sunset Station. And I spent a little time at the Rio, too.
Nice. Mike Palm is, you can't see this, Harry, but he's writing notes right now.
He
wants to make sure he knows your full bio.
I got to come see you, Mike. I just saw Ben a couple weeks ago when I was there, but I've never been to Circa yet. I got to see this. I got to check this place out.
You got to come. You got to come up to Stadium Swim and check out the sports book and the
right.
Legacy Club and Barry's. There's a lot to do here.
The issue for knowing Harry is that he would get here and it would be really hard to make him leave. So it would be like a residency sort of deal. Harry would be.
I might have to do some hot tub videos from the Circa pool and stuff.
That's also a dangerous game for people who get Harry's daily picks. A lot of hot tub Harry videos and Stadium Swim could end up being the site of one of them. So all right, Harry, you're back there in Arizona. Yeah, saw you at the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club with Cousin Sal and all the guys a couple weeks ago. But you've had time to recuperate from the old Vegas flu. Now you're back at it. Get some conference championship game picks going. Let's start with game number one, NFC Conference Championship game. Eagles right now laying 2.5. How are you looking to attack this one?
You know, I'm anticipating this game so much. I so much want to take San Fran. I love what they're doing as a team, and they're going to be very tough, but I think I still have to lean towards the Eagles. They're just a well-oiled machine. Look, last week, I think it was an awful decision. I know Giants had went into the game with confidence. We can go up against our NFC East rival and play them well. But when it was 4th and 8 and it was 7-0 and they're at the Philly 41 and they just got a sack and were out of field goal range, I thought they had to punt there. You cannot take the risk of not making that first down. And then 5 plays later down the road, it could be 14-0 Philly and it could be over. And that's exactly what happened. This Philly team didn't have to do too much on offense. They let the Giants beat themselves. Sirianni, I love the fire out of this guy. You see him on the sidelines. He's going crazy. I love it. They got 5 guys with 10 or more sacks on the season. I think they're going to put pressure on the rookie. They're going to put pressure on Purdy. McCaffrey's got that little bit of an ankle injury as well. I just think overall here, I think Sanders runs the ball well too, and I think they get it done. I think Philly moves on and goes on to the Super Bowl.
Harry, first of all, what a ridiculous push on the Orange +4 last night. You got Roger Ailes. Charge flagrant.
That was my video pick yesterday at +4 and 19 seconds to go. You're up 2 and guess what? You guys saw the end probably. I mean, I was lucky to get a push. North Carolina missed both free throws with 0.5 seconds to go.
Yeah, I know our own Hoops Peterson was tweeting about what a bad beat to miss the free throws. You spoke about Sanders rushing the football. Any interest in the Sanders rushing prop?
I do. I really like him over 51.5 rushing yards. He had 90 last week versus in the playoff game last week against the Giants. He's averaging over 5 yards a carry for the season. He's gone over 60 rushing yards 3 of his last 4 games, had over 50 in his last meeting versus Niners. I just think, again, this team is number one in the league in rushing the ball. Hurts did what he had to do last week in terms of rushing the ball. Didn't have to do too much because, again, the Giants let them have the game, basically. He didn't have to show off too much. Gainwell was great, too, in the second half. They pounded the ball. They're a great rushing team. They're the best rushing team in the NFL, and I think Sanders has another big game at home. I think over 51.5 is easily doable for him.
Yeah, and Harry Gaddon, you can follow at AAO Harry. Oh, it's interesting to me, Harry. I get why books obviously want to post props and have the markets up here, but with all the uncertainty, numbers for Patrick Mahomes are still widely available, and with the exception of the attempts prop, basically everything, if you look at the market, is available, and Mahomes' passing yard number set at 275.5 with the uncertainty with his right ankle. What do you make of that number specifically?
I'm still going to go under that 275.5. Obviously, we know he missed some time versus Jacksonville with that high ankle sprain. He finished with 195. He's gone over, forget about 275. He's gone over 225 only once in his last 4 games. The Cincinnati D held Josh Allen to under 275 last week. Huntley had just 226 in the playoff game before that for Baltimore. I think this is a situation where I think it's very smart where maybe Logan Wilson, linebacker for the Bengals, who is probably most underrated linebacker in the NFL, just covers Kelsey, let him spy on him, maybe get some help from safety Von Bell, who's 3rd on the Bengals in tackles, shadow Kelsey, and then make the other receivers have to step it up. Smith-Schuster, Valdez-Scantling, make them have to catch balls for Mahomes. They didn't do a great job last week. They came on late in the game against Jacksonville, but weren't there for most of the game. I think 275.5 is a lot to ask, and we don't even know if Mahomes is going to be able to endure an entire 60 minutes.
Harry, I think the AFC Championship game presents a fantastic chess match between one of the great offensive minds in the game and Andy Reid, and then maybe the most underrated defensive coordinator in the Bengals, Lou Anarumo. You spoke to some of the strategies Lou might have. You like Mahomes under. This game opened 1 Chiefs, moved to 1 Bengals, up to 2, 2.5, back down to 1. Have you played a side here?
Yeah. I'm a repeat of last year. I'm going to take Cincinnati. Burrow has Mahomes' number. He's 3-0 lifetime against him. He doesn't turn the ball over. In his career, Burrow, in 2 years now, 8 touchdowns, 2 picks, touchdowns to interception. They're second this year, second in the NFL, the Bengals were, in time of possession. I think that's going to be huge because I know Burrow got a lot of credit last week and well-deserved, but Ben, we discussed this last week where I thought Mixon needed to have a big game considering he didn't have one against Baltimore. He's not getting enough credit. He had over 100 yards rushing against the Bills last week. They had 13 first downs running the ball last week, the Bengals did. I think Mixon needs to show up again, too. I think he's going to have a big game. I'm not sold on that front five of the Kansas City Chiefs and the especially the linebackers. When it comes to if you get past that front line, I think they can Mixon can bust some. And Hayden Hurst, who I think might be a surprise. Look, he's got 9 catches, over 100 yards and a touchdown, 2 weeks in the playoffs. He had the second touchdown of the game last week against the Bills, set the tone. And Zach Taylor, again, 5-1 in the playoffs. This guy doesn't get enough credit. Kansas City, 18th versus the pass. I think Burrow's going to be able to take advantage of that. And I love the secondary for the Bengals too. I think they're going to be able to shut down whether it's Mahomes or whatever they're going to have to do. Bates, Bell, Hilton, even Eli Apple made some plays last week for Cincinnati. I'm all over the Bengals.
And that total, too, it's come down as part of the correlation with the Mahomes injury concerns was 49.5 at open. Harry, now down to 47. The team total for Kansas City is in that 23 range. So if you like Cincinnati, if you like Mahomes to an under on a passing prop, would you also couple that with either a team total or just an under bet in general in the game?
Maybe the under, too, because, yeah, look, if Mahomes can't get going, and they do somewhat, because Kelce had 14 catches last week. We know how great he is. But if they can control that, they can cut that in half even, and nobody else that makes plays, and maybe Henny has to come into the game. Yeah, and again, listen, it was very impressive what Cincinnati did defensively against Buffalo. They ran like 25 more offensive plays than the Bills. Bills couldn't get anything going. If Mahomes doesn't feel right, does not seem right, and they can cut Kelce down, I think the under is the play.
All right, Harry, you were on the right side with Syracuse. And if people got it late, they got 4.5 and it was a winner. What's your best college basketball play tonight?
Boy, you know what? I haven't even had a chance to look, guys. What do you guys like? You got one?
Harry's been busy watching the tennis, staying up all night. So we give him a pass. Done by 4 in the morning. I think Mike and I are both kind of looking at that Xavier UConn matchup tonight, thinking that the 8 was way too many on the opener, and Xavier to keep it inside 6.5 would make a lot of sense. That was our early the patented VSIN host lean here.
You know, it's funny. I did look a little bit, and I actually kind of liked a little bit. I was actually leaning a little I couldn't remember, but I was leaning a tad bit towards Connecticut because I know a couple weeks ago they got slammed, Connecticut, at home. They were a big favorite against St. John's and lost that game outright. They bounced back with the last game in a blowout. Xavier lost to DePaul. I know it may be bounce back time for them too. I know 7 may seem too many, but I'm leaning a little towards the Huskies here. I think they bounce back considering they haven't played well lately, but the last game they did, I kind of like the Huskies a little bit here.
Yeah, really interesting matchup there tonight. But I know Harry's up. He's up all night. He's recording his hot tub videos for picks and then sweating college hoops and then the tennis. You know, it's a little bit of everything. But Harry, it's always good to see you. That's the point.
Mike, hey, I love it, guys. And Mike, I'm waiting for Ben to give me some tennis action. I'm waiting for Ben to give me 10 tennis picks.
I don't know if you want any of it.
I mean, we got Aryna Sabalenka got my quarter pick last night, but yeah, at this point in the tournament, it's hard. Anyway, Harry, good to see you. Don't worry, I will give you some tennis action at some point. When we return, our final thoughts, we'll look at some props heading into conference championship week.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN with Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets. It's never been easier to join the action on the new BetMGM app, featuring a fresh redesign with improved features and quicker navigation. Planning a trip to Vegas? You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM resorts located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards is sports betting's premier loyalty program, including exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager with BetMGM. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to take advantage of BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. As we wrap things up on the Lombardi Line, big thanks to our producer, Brian Ortega, behind the glass, Jeremy Wengel, our technical director, everybody else helping out behind the scenes, Sergio Sanchez, Aramis Westfall. We have Mikhail Bala. I should say Mikhail Miranda, because he does our F1. He has a different name, Mike Palm, for our F1 podcast.
They all have.
Mikhail Miranda. I'm sorry, Mikhail.
Stage names.
Yeah, that's his stage
like
name.
Like Amal Shaw. Stage names.
There you go. I'll just ignore what you said. Rob Bredo as well, helping out behind the scenes. I also noticed, too, we're about to get into some of these Super Bowl exact potential props heading into conference championship week. You guys have you did a special. It was what, like a pseudo blackjack tournament plus contest here? And the winners or the top finishers in the blackjack tournament got to pick a future, right? That's how it worked?
Yeah, it was our Derek and Mike's Holiday Invitational. You can still see the board down in the far corner over there. And
very nice.
Beeson covered it, especially after the guys made their pick. So 12 players were invited to participate. And then there was a Beeson provisional table. In case any of the 12 guys that said they were coming couldn't make it, there was a Beeson play-in table. It was fun. That was Derek has some great ideas. So a free tournament to get in, and then we gave away $100,000 worth of Super Bowl futures, starting with first place in the blackjack tournament. And a 4-round blackjack tournament got 20,000, and then 15, 12, 5, 10, 7, 5, and then 6 through 12 all got 5,000. But it was a draft order, and the order you finish, you had 1 minute to make your pick. Paul Howard made his way through the table. So he got into the event as well. It was funny. The person with the first, and you got the current odds on that night, which was the second weekend in December, the first pick for 20,000, they took the 49ers, whatever it was, plus 650 or whatever it was at the time. The second choice, who was the tournament leader all along, took Dallas. And he took Dallas, and he had told everyone he was going to take Dallas if he finished first. The reason wasn't that he necessarily thought Dallas was winning the Super Bowl. But let's just say he was long on Dallas in his business. So he did that to vitiate his position, which he's like Mattress Mac a little bit in that.
Yeah.
And then the third pace finisher, who's a pretty sharp guy, everyday baseball better, everyday player in the book, and also a table games player, horse owner, a good friend of mine. He had the third pick. He took the Eagles with the third pick. So he's alive. Paulie is sitting there alive with the fifth pick. The Bills were the fourth pick, and they were the favorite at the time. They're out. Paulie had the fifth pick. He ended up with the Chiefs. So he has a $7,500 bet on the Chiefs at plus, I think it was 450, something like that. And then the sixth place finisher took the Bengals at 10-1. So first, third, fifth, and sixth are still alive in the picks.
That's fascinating. Well, and all you think about, too, where we were at just mid-December with that and how many things have changed. And, that is really interesting from the mental perspective of that.
Vikings were in there, Dolphins, Chargers at 40-1. Someone took the Lions at 150-1, hoping to get in the playoffs. But if they make the playoffs, you start monetizing the tickets.
Who
so the last pick of the draft was Baltimore, which I actually thought was a really sharp pick. We didn't know at the time Lamar Jackson was never playing another down, whatever the extent of his injury was.
If it wasn't for a ridiculous 98-yard fumble return, Baltimore might have won the game.
And you wouldn't have your nice middles with Cincinnati.
I would not have my nice middles with Cincinnati. All right, if you're watching us on VSiN.com or YouTube TV, there is Derek and Mike's Holiday Invitational listed 1 through 12. So 1, 3, 5, and 6. Those are the final four, at least the order of how it was selected. So
I want to do it again at All-Star break for baseball. And do
something.
Now,
really
I don't know if it's got to be 100,000, but I think that would be interesting. And I think Derek wants to do one in August and have 32 people in the tournament. And so everybody has to have an NFL team for the Super Bowl. Whoever finishes last gets whatever. Texans, the
my
Rams.
Bankroll is very small, but I'll throw my hat in the ring. If you guys need if you have like 80 different
drop-outs. You're going to be on that provisional table.
I'll be in the provisional table, in case somebody gets food poisoning and I can slide in there. That is fascinating to watch now going down the stretch. if you were looking, if for people who don't have any money invested now, who are trying to get involved, first off, needless to say, it's a really, you're kind of splitting hairs trying to find, like, I don't know if there's any value to be had in any of these Super Bowl exactas, yeah. But it is a fun market to look at. If you have conviction on both sides of the game, if you're like Harry, who we just had on, and you like Philadelphia and you like Cincinnati this week, the leader in the clubhouse right now, it's Eagles over the Bengals at plus 475, which I guess it makes sense because they're both favored, but I'm a little surprised that it would be that's the favorite right now. Just that it's sub 5-1 at this point.
It's 1-2, 1-3, and you could say that the Bengals defending champs were 2A because they never got to decide that game with the Bills. My friend that hosts a radio show in Des Moines, Kenny Miller. So we talked at length because he was going to make these exactas before the playoffs start, where the value is.
Right.
And he said, "What's your strategy?" I said, "I think you have to kind of decide who is going to win it and then cover yourself in the other conference." He was really high on the Bengals, right? He's in a good spot. Now, he can hedge off with Kansas City this week. He has Bengals, so let's look at the obviously different prices.
Right.
But he has Bengals over Eagles, Bengals over 49ers. That's how he covered the NFC. So essentially the Bengals wins, he hits one of those exactas that he bet before the playoffs start. So he could put some money, because he knows the payouts, he could put some money on the Chiefs. So it's an interesting way how you want to cover both conferences. But I said, don't go 3-3. You're taking all the value out. You got to pick a winner and then cover the other conference. I think that's the way to do it.
At least for this would be 49ers over somebody. For me, since I am a believer that San Francisco is the most complete team right now, I guess if you're trying to, if there's a way, if you had conviction, at least on the San Francisco side, let's say you do like 49ers to beat Bengals at 7-1. Mm-hmm. You can also tease the 49ers up with Kansas City right now.
Yep.
And that is an active way to, again, this is assuming 49ers win the game. And if you have conviction on San Francisco, but you could lock in a really nice middle price if San Francisco hits in game one, where you'd have a 7-1 ticket and then a teaser ticket on the other side.
So when you're looking at these odds, folks, this is essentially a three-team money line parlay.
Yeah.
Make sure it makes sense for what the best odds you can get. So you are essentially, if you're taking 49ers to beat Bengals, you're taking 49ers at a plus price over the Eagles. Mm-hmm. You're taking the Bengals relatively at a pick, a very small favorite on them right now, and then you're taking the 49ers over. So go out, use your calculator, do that or you can go on VSiN. You got to predict, obviously, the Super Bowl matchup, but there's look-ahead lines on money lines as well.
Yeah.
VSiN, go to the VSiN site. They have the calculator, parlay calculator.
I'm sure it's...
Put the three-team parlay in there and then see, does it pay as much as 7-1? If it doesn't, you're better off doing the three-team parlay.
That's a very good point to make. It's a good VSiN pro tip. No, you love your pro tips, Mike. That's a good one to talk about.
No, I like the I like the Bill 80 email, actually, for when I was at $9.99 for a month.
Yeah,
when will Bill, can we get down to $4.99, $5.99? Crazy Bill a D. He'll beat anybody's offer.
If I put this in our VSiN parlay calculator, if you are assuming Pick'em for the Super Bowl, with the best money line prices available, it's about plus 688. So
close.
7-1.
You're getting better value at 7-1.
So you are getting better value on 7-1. That's obviously not guaranteeing that the Super Bowl line would be that. But if you look at the look-ahead lines, and I don't know where you would make those, but I mean, none of the matchups are possibly going to be more than 2-2.5, right? I mean, and that even seems a little steep when you think about how tightly power-rated all the four teams are.
And on a neutral, I think that the lines are going to be 1-1.5 on these games.
I would say, 2 at most, and that would surprise me a little bit. Again, that could be if there's injury or some sort of things coming up, but that's the way I would look at it.
If you took 2.5 with the NFC in these look-ahead markets, you're in great shape right now. You're getting much better than the market.
Well, part of my strategy with playing San Francisco in a playoff survivor was that I was basing it off the look-ahead markets, where it was AFC minus 2.5 the first couple rounds of the playoffs. And you could have said, all right, well, if I'm forced to use the AFC champion in the final round of playoff survivor, well, now I know I'm at least assuming I'm going to have a plus price coming back on San Francisco. So that was my thought.
Yeah, well, you thought well there. Tell me, before go, I don't want to, we're doing this, the hodgepodge today. Thoughts as we get down to the end of the Australian Open?
Thoughts? As soon as Novak Djokovic was questioned by his fellow players as the severity of his injury, I would have risked everything that he would win the tournament. You could still have gotten Djokovic in a minus 250 price heading into the round of 16. Djokovic will win in a landslide. He's a minus 2,000 favorite against Tommy Paul.
Yeah.
I've said all along that Rita Sabalenka, if she figures out her serve, will win the tournament. I had her to win the quarter, which she did last night. The serve, though, was a little shaky last night. Barely got there, but that would be my pick. Sabalenka on the women's side, Djokovic on the men's
side. Close to even money right now to win it?
It was 3-1 heading into last night. I believe Rybakina is still a slight favorite over Sabalenka.
Yeah, I like her in the other semi. That's the only bet I would make.
I would say Rybakina, Rybakina minus $2 is a pretty good bet over Azarenka on the first semi tonight.
And it's fun, and we look forward to Michael being back tomorrow.
Yes, we will. Hey, good to be with you, though, Mike. This was fun. Fun 2 hours for us. Up next, it is VSiN Big Bets. Mike Palm's his best friend, Amal Shah, is on that show with Dave Ross. We'll go over to the South Point next as you're watching VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.